Anyway, let's talk about you.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, this is like
your life.
This is super weird for me. We'll just chit chat because I know like you're also just kind of the best. And I know every time we end up on a call, we like end up spending like a half hour extra just like bullshitting and talking about actually good things.
Yeah.
So
we know. Can do this. Yeah. I mean, okay. So we are in the midst of coronavirus. We're in the thick of it now. And this is a whole new season of your podcast.
Woohoo!
A whole new season. Three seasons. That's crazy. Like, that's got to be the like, the pinnacle of a lifespan for a podcast, right? Like, as I feel like all the podcasts I listen to either had, like, one season and that's it, or now they're in their, like, 25th season, and you're like, how did you have a podcast before podcasts were a format?
Yeah, it's super, it's weird because I don't think I thought this far when I started it. I really think that I started it, I was like, this seems fun. I might as well do this. I honestly, I always tell people like this is the most selfish passion project I could have because I literally love meeting and talking to other really cool young people. And I want excuses to like have extended conversations with them, be able to talk to them all the time. And so this is like the perfect excuse for a lead-in. Like no one thinks I'm weird if I'm like, hey, you seem awesome. Want to be on my podcast? Whereas like if I message them and was like, you seem cool. Want to FaceTime with me for an hour just to be friends? Like that doesn't work. It's not the same. So truly, I'm so glad I started it because it is the most selfish. I get to talk to so many really, really cool, really fun people. I don't know. I really can't believe it's season three either. It feels very strange. It feels, season three feels established. It feels like I've done things for an extended period of time and now we're here.
I will say that like from the creator side, we love to talk about ourselves. Like most of us love to talk about ourselves. And also I just remember when you came to me with the idea and you were like, hey, there's this thing that I'm like, I'm gonna try. And do you wanna do an interview for it? And I was like, absolutely yes, because you are deeply qualified to be doing this. And a lot of people who do it are not. But also, it's like very cool to see the project continue past that initial moment of launch, right? Like, because a lot of things start and you get to be part of them and you're like, oh, this is cool. But to see it continue and to see it sort of gain steam, I think is a really cool experience just from like the outside. Okay, so like, let's talk about why you decided to do this podcast about creators and Gen Z, because it wasn't just, you weren't just like, let me just pick a topic out of the hat. You are in fact qualified to talk about this.
Well, thank you. So it's actually really interesting. I mean, as you know, as everyone listening knows, I initially started the podcast with Gianluca Russo, who's a writer, freelancer, amazing, amazing person. Also very fun on TikTok. And I know he loves that. So go follow him if you're listening to this. But he actually had texted me and I had been really trying to figure out at the time how to develop some sort of platform or something to amplify Gen Z voices. And I'll get into why that's always been super important to me in a second. But literally out of the absolute blue, Gianluca texted me and was like, can we do something together? I don't know what, but can we do something? I want to. And I was like, yeah, of course. I'm always down for a good passion project, like always here for a side hustle. Definitely. And I threw out the fact that I was trying to figure out this Gen Z platform. He was like, what about a podcast? If you want to do like conversations, I have the journalism background, like you have the Gen Z content creation kind of focus. What about that kind of platform for it? And so that's kind of where the actual technicalities of the ball started rolling. But in terms of like why Gen Z and why that's always been my focus, I think that really goes quite far back. And you, Justina, know this quite well. It goes back to, I don't know, 13, 14, when I was all up on Twitter doing fashion blog stuff and, you know, inserting my way into the Huffington Post teen writer squad. And I don't actually know how much you know this. I feel like I've mentioned it to you a few times, Justina, but I did this thing on Twitter when I was younger where I just constantly inserted myself into conversations because I thought that that's how you were supposed to do it on Twitter. Like, everyone's public, so you can just talk to everyone as if they're your friends, and eventually they believe that you are their friends. And so at the time, I really wanted to find fellow, like, young bloggers and writers. That was my big thing, because no one in my little suburban town had a blog. No one else really cared about social media or fashion or anything. So I was trying to find internet friends to do that with. And so eventually I found the Huffington Post teen account and vertical. And whenever they would publish your articles, I don't know if you remember this, but they would also like at you guys. So slowly I followed all of you and I would interact with all of you and like the live tweeting and whatever. And it literally got to a point where when the editor, Liz Pearl, who is our literal patron saint of Gen Z and young artists, and deserves such a shout out, she moved over to Instagram to work on teen communities and made a Facebook group as a little like focus group for things that they were working on and just seeing what young people were into, which I know you were in at the very beginning as well. She added me, and it was literally all the Huffington Post teen kids that she worked with and me, and that's it. Because I thoroughly convinced everyone that I was just one of you guys. And I didn't mean for it to become a long con, but it literally got to the point where like 2 years ago, I was on a Facebook panel with Cameron Garrett, who I had on, oh my gosh, I almost had her on. And then her book came out and the audio file died. So I'll have her on soon, but she is an incredible novelist and an incredible young person. I was on a panel with her at Facebook headquarters in New York, and she said, oh yeah, Emma and I met because we both wrote for Huffington Post Teen. This is to a room of reporters. And I had to go, actually, I didn't. You will find no byline with my name on it.
I guess people listening to this podcast cannot see my face. But I'm just now realizing that this is like the Mandela effect that I'm living.
Yeah.
Is that I absolutely, until you just said that, thought that you had written something for mm-hmm. HuffPost Teen. And I personally did not read that many people's articles. And so I was always just trying to be really polite and like pretend that I had read things you'd mm-hmm. written, but you'd never written anything. So we were just sitting in this like mutual scam.
I don't think that I ever tried to convince anyone that I like was a writer. I just was like, I have my blog, it's in my bio, and like I want to be friends with all of you. But it took until like recent years where I realized, oh no, I literally accidentally tricked everyone. Like,
I had no idea until you just said that.
I mean, Cameron's little sister literally calls me the one who lied. Like, that's how she refers to me.
That's great, though, because, like, that's, I mean, yeah, sure, it's a scam. But also, I think that's what's so cool about the internet, because I feel like more or less it's how we all got there. Like, we all did something that was maybe not the, like, normal thing to do, but because mm-hmm. it wasn't the normal thing to do, we stood out and we got there. Because, like, for me, with HuffPost, I wrote Liz an email, actually, like, months before. I had written her an email because I saw that they were looking for kids to write. Mm-hmm. And I was like, hey, like, I have this blog. I'd love to write something for you guys. And I never got a response. And I don't know if they, I don't know if anyone remembers that. I did not get a response. And then a completely, like, separate thing in my life happened. And I ended up doing a photo shoot for the Disney Channel. And then I got a response, but it was like a completely like new, like it was like they had no idea that I existed up to that point. And right. I choose to believe that it's because my original email got stuck in a spam file somewhere, but I honestly know that it was because I was not that interesting up until that point.
Right. And that's like one of those things I feel like I like manifested these connections before manifestation was trendy, but it really is like, it's such a funny starting out story. And obviously like by then I was fashion blogging. I was like going to shows as press. Like I was writing, I was doing stuff. It wasn't like I fully conned without putting in any work or content creation. I need to say that because like, I don't want people to think I was intentionally like fully scamming people. But like that really was such a major start for me. And then getting into that Instagram group and being surrounded by people like you and Cameron Garrett and Cami Baker and like, oh my God, who else? Like Chase Gutman and Josue Mendez, like incredible photographers and writers and artists. And just like, one, I always felt so insecure because I was like, I'm just a little fashion blogger. I don't have bylines. I messed up. I was put in here by accident, but I guess I'll make the most of it. But literally just being in those environments and those communities and seeing how incredible young people were and seeing the content that you all were creating and the artistry that you all had. And then I was also like very into fashion, very into business at the time, still am, but I was seeing the kind of content that companies were putting out and seeing the kind of content that brands were making and the people that magazines were hiring. And I was like, this doesn't make sense because they are putting out shittier work by much more expensive old people than what I'm seeing by the young people I know who are literally just doing it for fun, like at midnight after they've done all their AP homework. Like, truly, and that's kind of what kickstarted me on the Gen Z, like teen young people thing. It's like just seeing the sheer amount of talent and then how much that was going unregarded and unacknowledged. And I was just like, shit, I gotta do something about this, man. I gotta try my best.
I think it's so interesting because when I think back on that group and that time, because it was a long time ago now, especially like in internet time, it was practically ancient history. There was this moment right before I think being an influencer or being a creator blew up. Mm-hmm. And a large part of that is Instagram's influence. Like, I mean, like I can never overstate Instagram's sort of mitigating power in making all of that blow up. But there was this moment where it's like we were doing so much, like so many of us were doing so much just for fun, and it wasn't a business. Mm-hmm. And we weren't making money yet. And I think about it a lot because when I look back on that group, it is so crazy to me that you can almost to a member find every single one of us now, and they are more or less doing the exact same thing but on such a higher level.
It's
great. Well, and it's also because we were 15. And I don't think that people, even now that we have TikTok creators and we have, you know, seen the long-term careers of YouTubers and understand the influential power of influencers, people still don't take teens seriously. And I don't understand it.
For everyone listening, I just had the biggest eye roll because I cannot stand it. I really can't. Like, I cannot comprehend how there are so many articles about how, like, right now, specifically, like, Charlie and Dixie D'Amelio, like, Addison Rae, are the most followed people on TikTok. And in the same article, they'll be like, these people are so big. They have the most following. They've created content houses. Like, this is what's going on. And then it's also, like, kind of so much, like, writing them off. Like, well, we'll see. Like, probably won't work out. Like, I'm sure their parents had a lot to do with it. And I'm like, I don't think they did. I don't.
It's also, I think, because we fundamentally have a problem with people disregarding teenagers as an audience. It's yeah. not just teenagers as creators, it's teenagers as an audience, which makes no sense because teenagers are an incredible audience in terms of driving all the things that companies like to hear, like sales. And so if you can work with a creator who has an audience that is primarily teenagers, that is incredibly valuable.
Yeah.
But because we don't value it, we just kind of like gloss over the importance of it. It's like they're just missing that main step in their bridge.
Yeah, and it's so interesting to me too, because I'll see like the one side of like the content creators being kind of like shoved aside and devalued, but also seeing it from like the brand side where they're like, well, they don't have disposable income, they're teenagers, like we should target to the parents because they have the disposable income. But like, if any of those marketers thought about when they were teenagers, like if they want to buy something, they're going to figure out how to buy something. Like, even if their parents are like, I'm not spending $100 on, you know, your new Nintendo Switch because you want to play Animal Crossing during this quarantine, I'm not giving you the money to get a whole device for one video game. Which, reasonable argument from a parent's perspective. But, like, a teenager will figure out where and how to get that money. They will get a job. They will do something. And they will have that disposable income, because at that point, any money that teenagers have is disposable income, effectively. Because you assume, like, their shelter, their food, everything is covered. So any extra money they make is their money to spend.
And the thing is, too, is a lot of creativity. And I truly believe that people are becoming more creative because we are finally getting to a point in our society, even though we have so many systemic inequalities and socioeconomic inequalities that need to be addressed still, we're getting to a point where people have more space and more outlets to be creative. Mm-hmm. And that creativity leads people to figuring out how to access the things that they want. Because that was true for me, even, mm-hmm. you know, 10 years ago when I started. Like, that's crazy, 10 years. But when I started my blog, I lived in a small town and had no one around me, very similar to you. I had no one mm-hmm. around me who understood the things that I was interested in. And I had no access to the things that would have made it easier for me that we have now. Like, there wasn't TikTok and you couldn't, you know, shop on your phone. I didn't even have a phone. I had one of those like sliding cell phones that mm-hmm. had the keyboard in it. And, you know, Twitter was like, you could text your tweet to Twitter and they would post, but you couldn't like access it on a phone. Like, that's like how, like, the technology has advanced so incredibly in just mm-hmm. this little bit of time. But even then, you know, I figured out how to get the money together to buy my first pair of Doc Martens. Like, that's the big, like, when I think about like my parents weren't going to buy it for me purchase, like, it was these Doc Martens that were, I think, $150 and were the most expensive thing I'd ever owned.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like, you'd figure it out. And that was before I had things to help me figure it out.
Right.
And so I think that now that kids have, you know, more creative tools and more access to other people and more ability to collaborate with each other, which is what we're seeing on TikTok. Cool. It's so cool. And they have so much ability to sort of like invest in that and invest in their own creativity. And brands who aren't recognizing that are dinosaurs.
Yeah. And like, inevitably, I feel like what's going to happen is, as much as it aggravates me that brands aren't trying to reach this market, what's going to happen is, if they don't try and they don't care to try and no one internally convinces them to try, they're going to lose in the long run, because those are the consumers that are going to grow up. It's by far a generation that cares about brand loyalty, that cares about where they're buying things, and they stick to it. And that's shown, whether it's like achievable at certain points in time, because everyone knows that like a Forever 21 and an H&M is always just gonna be the go-to when you don't have that much money and you need new clothes. But they do care, and that's shown. So like, if you're not trying now, you're gonna lose in the long run, because this isn't a consumer base that you're gonna lose as they grow up. They're gonna grow up with you if you reach them now. So the brands that are doing a poor job will lose out in the long run. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I wish they did better, but I don't feel bad.
I mean, if they hired you, they would know that, and then they would do better. See how that works?
Yeah. I mean, seriously, as I'm, like, looking for jobs, this is the true pandemic experience right now of graduating college in May. I don't know when this episode's coming out, probably right around when I'm supposed to graduate. I will be doing it virtually. There will be a slide with my name on it. It's going to be great. I'm so excited. And then hopefully, along with the other 22 million people that have filed for unemployment in the last 4 weeks, I will find a job, even though there are not 22 million jobs. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens. So if brands do want to hire me, do it. Thanks.
This is the moment. This is it. This is your guys' chance to hire her while you can afford her.
This is my ad read for the podcast episode. It's just me selling my own services. Please hire. Thank you. Discount code. I listened to Jen Slay. Please help me. I can't. The world is so crazy.
The world is insane, but I'm choosing to be very optimistic about this, despite the fact that I literally have a degree specializing in how this is going to disproportionately affect so many minority communities. And I think that the space for creativity that is being made right now is going to be fascinating. Yeah. I think it's going to be really interesting to see the platforms that survive, the platforms that begin to thrive, and the platforms that just absolutely crash and burn. How do you feel, like, right now, where we're at, what are the, you know, social platforms that you think are going to make it out of this, going to make it out alive, other than TikTok? Because TikTok is a no-brainer.
Yeah, I mean, TikTok's a no-brainer, but I do think TikTok may see problems on the flip side, just from a pure, like, governmental standpoint. It's like the first thing I feel like, honestly, our current president is gonna try to focus on as soon as this is over and he's over trying to protect his own booty about everything he's done. I feel like the first thing that's gonna happen after that is like focusing on a target, and it's gonna be TikTok. I just feel like that has so many potential regulatory issues that, like, TikTok's going to thrive now, but potentially on the flip side of this, they could be facing some problems. So that's my don't rely your career on TikTok, but it'll be very fun for right now. I feel like Facebook, like, the platform itself is going to do well. Like, way better than they have been, because I think a lot of people are finding comfort in community, and Facebook groups is so unique in its ability to create topical communities in that way, and I don't think another platform can do it as well. Like, Reddit does it to a certain extent with the subreddits on different topics, but I think Reddit is still pretty niche in terms of a platform. I think it just doesn't expand as well to a lot of different audiences. So I don't know. Discord has a lot of potential, especially since it's a newer platform and a lot of its use is based on gaming. And I've seen a lot of non-gaming communities trying to move their community conversation over to Discord. Like, I recently saw, I'll have to fact check this, but I believe it was The Chain, which is a organization for, like, eating disorder awareness within the fashion and media spaces. So, like, specific, very specific of an organization, but I believe that they were creating a Discord chat or thread for their community to be able to support each other and chat and have those regular conversations, more like a more fun Slack, I guess. So I'm interested to see where that goes. I think Instagram's gonna do great. And the one that's really interesting to me is YouTube, because I've seen there's so much content going out right now but the type of content is changing because so many creators were focused on daily vlogs. So many creators were focused on crazy stunts, doing crazy things like the Jake Pauls and David Dobriks of the world. And they just inherently can't create that kind of content. So I feel like a lot of the content's reverting to like OG YouTube of the sit down and chat videos. There may be a lot more story times, but like they can't be story times of now. So people have to remember things, which who knows? Because once the story time's too late, is there as much emotion or fun in it? Who knows? I think YouTube may be a really interesting platform because I don't know. I'd be interested to see what you think about YouTube. I don't know if you're a big watcher of YouTube.
I have always felt, I think because I, with my own content, really went from a blog-based platform to almost entirely moving to Instagram. Mm-hmm. I have always found that YouTube feels very clunky to me. Yeah. I don't have sort of like the desire to create content for YouTube ever. And it's something that people ask me all the time, especially people who I feel like maybe aren't as versed in internet content. It's always like, oh, well, you make YouTube videos. And I'm like, no, I actually don't make YouTube videos, but I generate, you know, hours worth of content on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, it's just because it's a more immediate way to reach my audience. And I think for me personally, Instagram feels more intimate almost. Like I can connect directly with my followers and I can see their faces, you know, seeing my content, and they can give me feedback right away and I actually get it and I see it in a way that I've never felt with YouTube. Like I've never had a huge following on YouTube, but for me, just like watching YouTube, and then I had a phase where I was trying really hard to make, you know, vlogs, and I still do it if there's something that I'm doing. Like I made one for my summer camp that, you know, is like visual. Like I just wanted to, you know, put a bunch of moments together. But even now for me, a better way to do that is TikTok.
Yeah.
Like I would rather make that content and put it on TikTok because then I can share it much more easily. I feel like it doesn't need to be as long. There doesn't need to be the same like level of production that I feel has to go into a YouTube channel at this point to sort of, you know, get that attention. Because even I think right now people feel like at like Emma Chamberlain, who's great, her videos, like she was the sudden breakout star of YouTube. And people were like, oh, like her videos are so raw compared to sort of like the really highly produced, you know, makeup tutorials we're used to, or the really highly produced, like Jake Paul's videos feel casual, but they're not. Like David Dobrik is the most like casual we can deal with. And his kind of like are casual in their production value, but very high level in terms of what he's doing in the videos.
Yeah.
And even Emma Chamberlain's videos are edited. Like it takes her, I remember reading an interview with her. She's like, yeah, it takes 8 to 10 hours. To do
at minimum for her videos.
At minimum. And that's like the level of production that you have to be on in order to maintain a YouTube channel. And like you were saying, right now they can't do those crazy stunts. You know, David Dobrik can't rent out a billboard and put his friend's drunk text on it because no one's gonna see it and he can't go outside to look at it. So, you know, what are we gonna do? We gotta stay in the house and, you know, light flamethrowers behind Addison Rae. But even that is you know, you can't do that because you can't have Addison Rae at your house. So I feel like YouTube right now, I have always felt like their Achilles heel is the clunkiness of the process, right? It's not a seamless process. It's not an easy process. It's not something that is I think accessible to creators who don't have a whole setup, right? Like you don't have the big iMac and you don't have the cameras and you don't have the lights and you don't have the backdrop. It's no longer the YouTube of 2008 or the YouTube of 2005, where, you know, Tyler Oakley was making videos with his tiny little webcam attached to a computer that didn't have a camera. Like, that's not where we're at anymore. And you can't break into that space. And I think if you cannot constantly have new creators in your platform that are actually gaining traction, you are going to begin to lose your creator audience. And right now, I think YouTube's flaws are being put on display more than its benefit. And I think that other platforms are filling the need better and kind of coming up on their throat. And we respect, like in my mind, I look at YouTube the same way that I think for a long time I looked at Facebook, which is like, it's a pillar of what the internet is for us today. But that does not mean that it is best serving what we need from the internet today. Because I agree with you that I think TikTok is probably going to become a target in terms of legislation, just because they do have, you know, some murky backgrounds going on there. But I think that TikTok perfectly encapsulates what, especially Gen Z, needed out of the internet right now.
Yeah.
Which is this sort of, like, because I've gotten into so many arguments about the, like, TikTok versus Vine thing, where I'm like, yeah, Vine was great. Like, I was here for Vine. I remember Vine. But to me, TikTok is better. Like, it's better. And the longevity of creators and the ability of creators to do more or less the same thing but in different ways over and over again on TikTok is much higher. Like, it's a much higher sort of, like, rate than when we had Vine. Because when you were doing Vine, you needed to do something different in every single Vine. And you only had 6 seconds and you had to make it work. And we started to get to this point where Vines were becoming, again, super highly produced, taking someone 8 hours to, you know, edit the whole thing together. People were trying to do backflips over themselves. Like, it was, like, crazy. And now we have TikToks, and you do have that highly produced content on TikTok, but you also have kids literally filming TikToks in their bathroom randomly that you can tell they did not expect anyone to see that blow up. And it's people who are just funny. And I think that that's sort of, like, the ideal, that for me, that's the ideal, like, birthplace of new creative talent. It's just people who happen to be funny or happen to be great dancers or happen to be, you know, doing their makeup really nicely, and they weren't inherently trying to become a beauty guru. And there's nothing wrong with that, because that is a path that people want to take. But we're starting to, like, have this ability to see that talent in a more, like, natural way, and in a way that feels more, like, intuitive to who you are individually as a person. Like, I see the content that, like, TikTok's algorithm, it's getting smarter every day. It knows what I want to see. And I'm getting to see that even if it's a user who has 5 followers.
Mm-hmm.
And YouTube is not that space anymore. Like, you can't do that on YouTube anymore. When people tell me they want to start a YouTube channel, I'm like, I don't know what you could possibly do, no matter how great you are. It's not a reflection of your talent or your personality to break into that space at this point.
I think it's interesting because YouTube got so much about the production value, and it got so focused on, you know, having the right lights, having the right camera. You have to, even for, like, a sit-down video, like, everything has to be produced. It has to be edited to perfection. Like, if you're gonna be, like, the authentic person, and, like, that's gonna be your personality, like, you gotta do the jump cuts and the zoom-ins like Emma Chamberlain does. Like, that's just how it came to be. And as someone who's, like, always watched a lot of YouTube, like, to the point where my friends at school were like, why do you spend so much time watching other people's lives? Like, what? And I'd be like, it's market research. It's for class. I promise. Like, I just need to know these things. It's fine. Like, I just need to watch it. I promise. This is not me just wasting my time. But even I've realized, like, truly the more bored I get during quarantine and everything, like, the things that I used to watch and the people I used to watch, especially as they're also isolated, I am noticing who doesn't have the personality. There is a huge difference that is coming out for me right now, which with who actually has the personality and the comedic timing and the energy to hold up a video, or, like, even the ideas and the intelligence to hold up a video on their own, and who relied on the production and the stunts and the editing to make that happen. And that's why I'm so interested in YouTube, because I do think, like, the process is clunky, and it's always going to be for more serious content creators. Not serious, but, like, people who want to do it professionally. What I'm seeing from people who, like, are still creating on YouTube is, they are people who want to be actors. They want to be directors. Like, they want to be professional in the entertainment industry, and this is, like, their portfolio. And that's a large majority of what I'm seeing staying there. And I think that will be the case still, because YouTube requires so much more effort than the more fun, natural platforms like a TikTok or even an Instagram. But I think that there's going to be a reckoning for YouTube. I think that we're going to see the content creators who don't have that personality and that added value from just, like, their persona themselves I think they may fall quicker than people expect. And those are always, that, yeah, it's just interesting.
I think that there will also be, I think as time goes on, because people ask me a lot about Instagram and they mm-hmm. go, you know, if Instagram disappeared tomorrow, my favorite hypothetical, they're like, oh, like this whole platform, if it just disappeared tomorrow, which I guess it could, I guess it's what happened to Vine, which wasn't nearly as well established, but I digress. If Instagram disappeared tomorrow, like what would your ideal platform look like if you were going to just move mm-hmm. all your content? And to me personally, what has been sort of a driving force over the last, I'd say like 1 to 2 years, where my audience has kind of grown like exponentially, is what I love about Instagram is I have the ability to be both serious and casual. Like mm-hmm. I can make a video this morning on my Instagram story where I'm like, I burnt an English muffin this morning for no reason other than the fact that I have a Star Wars toaster. My boyfriend really likes Star Wars and I can't see any of the controls on it, and therefore it always burns everything. So I have to just watch it and then, you know, pop my muffin out early because the timer doesn't go off. It's a whole mess. But I can make a like 15-second video or a 5-minute long video on Instagram explaining that. And then also post, you know, sponsored content that is an outfit post with a brand that I work with that I really love. And they've given me a lot of creative freedom to sort of express myself however I'm feeling right now during this pandemic. And that's on my feed. And those are live at the same time mm-hmm. because I can be both Justina, the brand who, you know, is doing this content and does the fashion content and does the beauty content and, you know, goes to the events in LA and does the brunches and all of that. And then sort of like Justina, the inside person who has been wearing hoodies for the last 3 weeks, realistically, and, you know, burned my English muffin and also can't go outside. And so like there's space to be both of those things at the same time, because that's my reality. Like that's mm-hmm. what I am. And I think that any platform that would ever want to challenge sort of like that space would have to incorporate both of those things, because even TikTok can't do that. Because on TikTok, I've made personally the decision that I want my TikTok to be funny and to be sort of like the things that I enjoy. And my most popular TikTok right now, I think, is actually me ranting about someone talking about my hair, which is a reality of my day-to-day life, being mixed and having big curly hair and having people like say whatever they feel, good or bad, about it all the time. It was my most popular TikTok. And that's not content that I think I would have inherently thought about putting on my main feed, even though I am literally an ethnic studies student. Like I'm graduating with a degree in ethnic studies and I talk about racism a lot on my Instagram story. And so like my TikTok, that's where I put that content. That's where I, you know, I tried to do all the TikTok dances because I think they're funny. And I do, you know, videos of my dog, like stuff like that. I've made that decision versus other creators I know who are in the fashion space who've decided that TikTok is going to be their space to do more fashion content or to do more beauty content. And, you know, it's really good. But for me, I'm like, I don't want to watch that. Like, I watch that every single day. Like, that's what we all do all the time. So I like the funny videos. Like, I like seeing people with their siblings in a garage, you know, learning a dance. But both, like, I can't exist in both spaces on TikTok the way that I can on Instagram. So I think that would always be sort of like, every time someone's like wants to play that hypothetical game with me, I'm like, that's what you would have to have in a platform to really topple Instagram, because you can't do that on Facebook. You can't do that on TikTok. You can't do it on Twitter. When people are like, oh, Twitter's your inside voice and Instagram's your outside inch. No. That's not true. Twitter is just your inside voice. In fact, it's your inside voices. It's the voices in your head. That's what Twitter is. And on YouTube is just, like we've been saying this whole time, that you have this persona and you live within that. Like, that is what you are. Like, if David Dobrik tomorrow decided that instead he wants to talk about politics, like, really seriously talk about politics, he can't do that. If Jake Paul wanted to, you know, switch completely to making travel vlogs where he talks about food, I don't know that he could do that in a realistic way. Like, I don't know that he could do that and maintain his audience the way that he is.
No. Or they absolutely couldn't.
Exactly. And, or, like, if Emma Chamberlain decided that she, you know, was going to completely pivot from what she's doing, which is not even there's not a category, there's not a niche for what Emma Chamberlain is, even though, you know, there are other vloggers who do similar stuff, but she couldn't suddenly just pivot into beauty and be taken as seriously as like a Manny MUA or, you know, Jeffree Star. Like, they can't cross their sections, yeah. even the ones who we think would have the ability to do so. Like, even the ones who do the cross collabs, like even, you know, Shane Dawson. Mm-hmm. Shane Dawson is a brand, and Shane Dawson is in a niche of his own making, but he cannot suddenly, like, he couldn't come out tomorrow wearing a suit in every video with a clean cut haircut and be like, I'm not going to do conspiracy theories anymore. We're only going to talk about true crime. Like, it would probably be great. I think he'd probably be phenomenal at it, but you can't pivot like that, and you can't necessarily be as multifaceted as I think it appears from the outside.
Yeah, there's YouTube definitely has a lack of allowance for that. And I think it also has to do with, like, one, the audience expectation that, like, they came to you for one kind of content and you're, like, gonna be judged for something else. There's also, YouTube's very interesting to me, and, like, it, this to me also extends over to Instagram a little bit with, like big influencers, but I feel like people get very aggravated when influencers start moving from what they did initially to, like, who they are as they've grown up. And I mean, that's a teen thing too, right? Because that existed when Tavi Gevinson was doing, you know, Rookie, and she was just blogging and, like, living her best grandma thrifted clothes life and going to fashion shows. And then she decided, you know, I don't really want to do fashion anymore. This isn't my focus. I started this when I was 11. I'm 17 now. I'm more interested in acting. I'm more interested in other things. This isn't my focus. And people were so angry. Like, I remember, like, this is this old name, I haven't heard it in forever, but Scott Schumann, who is the sartorialist, was like, for the record, Justina just fully, like, mock fainted on her couch. That's the only word I can describe for that. But he was, like, in an editorial, like, pissed about this 17-year-old girl choosing a different path of her life and, like, calling that, like, a privileged choice. Like, we gave you a front seat. You should be thankful for it. And I feel like people, audiences more, feel entitled to that first person that they became attached to. And I see it a lot with, like, influencers being called, like, fake, or, like, they're not real anymore, or they're trying too hard, or they're changing. It's like, yeah, they are, but that's also kind of part of the human experience. Like, you aren't the same person as you were 4 years ago when you first found Emma Chamberlain. I don't think you deserve to expect that she'd be the same person. And also, if you started having millions and millions of followers and being invited to events and were given free shit, you would also want, like, free Louis Vuitton clothing and to be a brand ambassador. Like, I just think that going back to, I don't know if we talked about it, like, here before, but going back to, like, that idea of, like, being humane about it, I think there's a perspective with influencers and people online where you forget that they're a person behind their posts, and you stop remembering, like, oh yes, they're a person. They can evolve. Their interests can change. It makes sense that they'd make a mistake. And, like, the internet just cuts that off completely, which is so scary. It's so scary.
There is a marked difference between the things that the internet is willing to forgive and the things that they aren't. I mean, I know that we've talked about this in the past. Like, there have been creators who have done things that, for me personally, I'm like, I'm done with your content. Like, I will be done with you and your content as a personal choice. And that's it. And that's fine. Mm-hmm. But they have a lot of followers who are willing to defend them and are willing to go to bat for them and are like, oh, well, you know, people change. But when people change of their own accord in a non-negative way, it becomes very volatile very quickly. And I think it does touch on the, like, production value thing we were talking about with YouTube. But I know that for me personally, I definitely went through a struggle probably about 2 or 3 years ago, where it was when I moved to Los Angeles, and all of a sudden I had so much more ability to create content that I'd sort of been, like, thinking about for years and seeing other creators do. And, you know, I called it make it pretty. Like, I could make everything prettier than I could necessarily in my hometown, mm-hmm. just because I didn't have the ability to do that. And there were probably a solid, like, a month or 2 months there when I first moved to LA where I was trying so hard. And I was trying to do, you know, this fashion content, and I was trying to do this, like, beauty content that wasn't very authentic. And it was just, like, garbage. Like, it was honestly so bad. And I have this audience that has realistically grown up with me. I have people who've mm-hmm. been following me since I was 13 years old, and I'm 22 now. So we've been out here together for a while. And finally, one of my followers was just like, hey, like, I know your content's changed a lot since, you know, I was following the blog, but this is, like, really different. And she's right. Like, I was writing, like, these different I was just trying to do this thing that I thought everyone expected from me now that I was in LA. Mm-hmm. And I'm so grateful that my audience was willing to extend me the space to, like, experiment with that, because it needed to happen. I don't think that I would have been able to, like, stay here and be able to create the content I'm doing now if I hadn't had the space to, like, try that out and be like, wow, this is trash. I should not do this anymore. And then just have that day where I went back to doing what I liked, and you know, yeah. it's better now. Like, when I compare my content from before then and then that time period and now, it's so much better. It's improved immensely, but I needed that space to do that. And I needed that follower to just be like, hey, like, I still love and support you, but just so you know, we're seeing that this is different and kind of weird. Mm-hmm. And it was constructive and not aggressive and not sort of, like, shaming. And I see for so many other creators, they don't get to have that experience. And I think it can be traumatizing, really. And I do think that it can fracture the relationship between a creator and their audience.
Yeah.
And depending on the creator, like, that can be very devastating, I think. Especially if you have a relationship with your following where they have followed you for so long and you know so many of them, not necessarily personally, but, like, you know them, like, you know a lot of your followers as well as they know you.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, that's something that people maybe don't think about when they're, yeah, attacking a creator for trying something new or for changing or for pivoting, or for, like, not pivoting. Like, there are creators who have, you know, that I follow, we talk about this a lot, that I love the sort of, like, mommy bloggers that do the outfit posts every single day. And every single day, it's a mirror selfie with the same filter and kind of the same style of outfit. And their hair looks exactly the same and it's immaculate. And you know what? They do that every single day. And they've been doing it for 5 years. And they continue to do it and they do it well. And I love that. And I don't expect them to do anything else. If they wanted to, great. But, like, I'm not going to come to your house and tell you all of a sudden to buy a tripod. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I also, as you were talking about that, I realized, like, there kind of is a correlation for, like, the average person too online. Like, I've always felt this as, like, a normal person, but I've, as I said before, like, I did fall in love with the Gen Z community because I was surrounded by influencers and writers and artists who did have pretty big platforms, whereas, you know, my Instagram account has been stuck at, you know, between 950 and 965 for the last 6 years, which does not agitate me at all, I swear. But I do think that there's that kind of barrier too for people on a personal level online. And I know I've dealt with that where, like, when you are a normal person online, you're expected to have normal person content. You're expected to post with your friend, post with your boyfriend, have little pun captions. Like, that's kind of, like, the basic of, say, like, Instagram, for example. And when people want to venture out of that, there is a backlash, and it feels more personal because these are literally, when you have a smaller following, like, they are literally people you've grown up with. They're literally people you know and interact with on a day-to-day basis. So, you know, for me, say I try to post more, like, a work-related content. And I've done that before because I'm very, very into the work that I do, the consulting that I do, the internships I've had. Like, I'm very passionate about that. But when I try to make that content, because these people know me personally and they're just here for, like, me at a party with my friends and, like, we're having so much fun, they kind of shut down when you want to venture out and, like, show different aspects of your personality outward of, like, the expected norm. So I think that's so it's so interesting because when you really look at online, like, everyone kind of faces the same problems in different ways. And it's just so weird that people, like, project expectations so specifically, whether you know the person or not. Like, if you have an expectation of what their content should be, you feel weird and you feel hurt when they change it, even if you've wanted to change it, which is so...
Yeah. I've talked about it a lot because I grew up, I mean, you and I have had this conversation before, but I grew up in, like, a farm town with farm people because I was in the 4-H program for 10 years. And my life in that program was so separate from what I was doing online. Like, I was literally, I was going to award shows in Los Angeles and, you know, interviewing celebrities for the Huffington Post, and then coming home and going to a 4-H competition in my whites, and we were doing, like, horticulture competitions. And, you know, my brother raises commercial poultry, and we were going to fair, and I was wearing boots and, you know, hanging out in pig pens. And I had drawn a very hard line between those two. And there was very little overlap, to the degree that I don't think people realized, even though I did talk about social media, and, like, I gave, one of my advisors talks about it still, but I gave a workshop when I was probably 14 that, you know, where I talked about, like, social media standards, like, how to keep your, like, social media clean, because it was for teenagers, and I talked about, but I don't think people knew, like, I think the majority of people did not know what I was doing, and did not know that at that point, I was already 5 years deep into the internet, like, I was already having bylines at the Huffington Post, and eventually then at MTV, and, you know, doing all these things, and the turning point for me did not come until I aged out of 4-H. So I did 10 years as a youth member, and I aged out at 19, and I started running my summer camp, and I worked with teenagers as, like, their adult director. And the teenagers that I worked with then, this would have been like 4 years ago now, they were so interested in it. Like, they, one of them found it, because I don't talk about it. She found it and was like, this is so cool that this is what you do. And this is so interesting. And they wanted to know how I did it. And they wanted me to show them how to edit photos. And I was really resistant to it at first, because I had become so conditioned to sort of, like, hide what really was, like, the opposite guide. Like, I had two guiding forces in my life, and one was the internet and one was 4-H. And I had tried to keep them as, like, apart as possible. And because I knew that the expectations that were being placed on me from each of these things would be very conflicting and would be very difficult for me to kind of, like, deal with. And then all of a sudden it was like, I didn't have a choice, and it just, like, crossed over, and my kids were like, yeah, our camp director is an influencer, and, you know, she's got 40,000 followers, and this is what she, and when she's not running camp, like, she does fashion content and she works with these brands, and, like, it became this, like, clout thing for them. And through that, I learned to be okay with sharing that, and to, like, be okay with the fact that people were not going to be okay with it, and to understand that other people's expectations of my content and what that means about me as a person, it's not my problem. Like, it doesn't matter to me if, like, you don't like the photo I posted in, you know, the vintage shirt, or if you don't like my high-waisted jeans. Like, that's not my, you know, kind of burden to carry. But it took me so long that I cannot blame now any creator who, you know, has a difficult relationship with their audience because of that. Because I know that, like, without the mitigating factor of teenagers, which brings us full circle, I don't know that I would have gotten to that moment. Like, I think I would have spent a very long time still trying to build that wall and maintain it, and then constantly be jumping back and forth over it.
Yeah. Teens are great. Moral of the story. That's the wrap up. Teens, Gen Z, they'll save everyone. We don't want the responsibility to save everyone, but we will regardless. Thank you very much. Okay, well, yeah, we do have to wrap this up because we have been talking literally forever, which is my favorite thing to do. As we started this off as, this is my selfish passion project. I love talking to people about all of this all of the time. I cannot thank you enough for helping me do this wonderful intro episode, Justina. You are such a little gem. I'm going to link you down in the show notes, so everyone, follow Justina if you don't already, which, if you don't, why don't you? She was already on. You should have followed her then. Like, come on.
Come follow my chaotic coronavirus content.
Yes. We are here for the chaotic coronavirus content. There will be new episodes coming every week. I'm not sure what day yet because I haven't picked. But I will let you know it will be the date that this comes out, that day, for every week. Until I decide I'm done. Because I'm that distinctly planned, it's Corona Brain, just how it is. Thank you so, so much, my dear. You have been wonderful.